Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, I'm live at OSCON 2016. I'm going to be talking with the Kaltura people to get an update of what has happened in the past 3 years. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 388, recorded live from OSCON on May 17, 2016. Kaltura Update. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itprotv/floss and use the code FLOSS30. And by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and totally unaware of it, projects you may want to download right after this show because it sounds really, really cool. I think today's going to be one of those. So I'm normally joined by a lovely and talented co-host at this point, but they are, in fact, actually, there's no other talented and lovely co-host today. I am on my own. I am live from OSCON 2016, and we have a guest coming in, two guests, actually, who are going to be talking about Kaltura. Now, we had Kaltura on quite a ways back, I think back in 2013, according to my notes. Let me see where my notes say. Yeah, we had them on in Floss 261 on August 14, 2013. So they said there's a lot of new stuff that's happened, so I want to go ahead and have them kind of fill that out so I can figure out what else that I want to play with Kaltura for. We have with me Zohar Babin and Jess Portnoy, who are going to represent the project. And we'll bring them on in just a moment. Usually, again, I'd be babbling with my co-host here to kind of say, well, what do you know about this and what do you know about this? But basically, video processing, video management, ability to wire video into your applications, manage transformations about the kind of stuff it is. And I know there's a lot of new stuff, too. So I haven't got a chance to go through too much of it on the website. So that's all I have. But before we get started with that, we have, in fact, a little message I want to deliver you. So a good IT pro is constantly learning and staying up to date with current technology certifications. IT Pro TV high-quality video tutorials will not only keep your IT skills current, but they'll bring you closer to achieving that new IT job that you've been working towards. They've got 1,000 hours of content and more than 30 hours of new content added weekly. You can stream their courses live and on demand worldwide. Course topics include pfSense, Citrix Zen Server, A+, AWS, Ethical Hacking, CompTIA, Advanced Security Practitioner, Microsoft Server 2016, MCSE, and more. And they recently completed CISA, C-I-S-A, a globally recognized certification in the field of audit, control, and security of information systems with Cybex author Brian O'Hara. Adam Gordon is also returning in June for CEH V9. June courses will also include CCNA Security, that's Cisco, and VCP6, that's VMware. 100-plus step-by-step virtual machine labs and Transcender practice exams, that's a $109 value. Transcripts let you follow from start to finish or jump right to any part of the studio. One low monthly subscription price, no hassle cancellation policy. Corporate and group pricing is available. Clients include Harvard, MIT, UCSD, Stanford, and more. So check out itpro.tv/floss. and upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month or $570 a year, but we have a special offer. Try it free for 7 days when you sign up using our code FLOSS30 to check out their courses, live stream, and more. You'll also receive 30% off the lifetime of your account. That's less than $40 per month or $399 for the entire year. Just visit itpro.tv/floss. Use the code FLOSS30 and try it free for 7 days, plus save 30% off the life of your account. We do thank IT Pro TV for sponsoring Floss Weekly. So now, let's go ahead and bring on our guests, as I need to push a button here, because I'm doing it all today. This is really cool. All right, there's the button. The button's right there. There we go. Hi, welcome to the show. Why don't you introduce yourselves?
Hey, so my name is Zohar Babin. I'm the Managing Director of Platform and Community in Kaltura.
Hi there, I'm Jess Portnoy. I do the packaging lead and community management as far as the technical aspects of the Kaltura open source operation go. Thank you for having us, Randall.
Very good, very good. So we have, I sort of gave the very brief hand-waving view of what Kaltura is. Kaltura, I needed some more sleep last night. That's pretty obvious. I'm a little bit distracted today. Okay, so why don't you give us the 30,000-foot view? What's the sort of overarching principle behind Kaltura, and what problem is it trying to solve?
Sure. So we see the world as a platform, right? So Kaltura is basically a platform, a cloud platform for everything video. And what we mean by everything video is not just that video, you know, needs to be on any device and all that stuff, but that video is really in every use case. If you think about any industry that you'd like, from agriculture to healthcare to surveillance to whatever, there's video is becoming the new data type in that, in the workflows, in the business processes of that specific industry. And we'd like to be the cloud that actually powers all those workflows and provides the capabilities to actually use video effectively in those scenarios. And so we basically provide end-to-end services for everything that touches video, from how do you ingest video from multiple sources, how do you transform video, like you said, transcoding, preparation, metadata extraction, all that stuff. How do you build search experiences on top of the video, the playlists and all that. Of course, how you deliver the video across any device, across any, be it if your screen is a building size on some street, or if your screen is as tiny as a watch. If your video is coming from a submarine, or if your video is coming from a mobile phone, we basically provide the capabilities to basically handle video anywhere.
Wow, cool. And so we had you on a few years ago. How has the surface changed? How has the sort of the problem space changed since a few years ago?
That's a really good question. So video is, we see it very robust and really being everywhere, but it's still a maturing market, right? People are used to working with text everywhere. People are used to working with images. But video requires a little bit more to it. And so in 2013... We've always built the platform, right? So we started building Kaltura in 2006. And ever since the beginning, we thought that a platform to power any video experience is really what we want to build. But in order to, you know, be in business, you also need to sell. So the way that we actually served everybody was basically by building on top of our platform, building capabilities for specific industries. So over the years, we've become pretty much de facto the most used product in education, in enterprise, and in media and entertainment, as well as over the top. So companies have basically used products that we've built on top of our platform to provide e-learning, to help students submit video assignments, to help employees collaborate around video as a knowledge base. To deliver over-the-top TV experiences. But what have changed over the years is that those markets and new markets are becoming more sophisticated. And our target audiences are becoming more and more developers rather than just the end users. And they need more tools to build it themselves. And we're gradually matured as a platform too, and we're now actually offering a lot of capabilities for those developers. And stay tuned for tomorrow, because we have really exciting announcements here in OSCON. But this is kind of a short pitch to it. Mm-hmm. Another thing that have changed since 2013 is that ever since the beginning, we've been an open source platform too, right? So kind of believe in doing good and doing well at the same time. But in 2013, we still were a little bit rough around the edges when it comes to you downloading the software and installing it yourself. It's still a cloud platform. It was, you know, it's a rather robust set of capabilities, a lot of technologies involved, and you needed a lot of technical capabilities yourselves to actually manage it yourself. And one thing that happened since 2013 is that Jess came on board to the team and did a lot of work around making it easier for others to deploy Kaltura and others to work with it. And we've had a massive project around releasing, automatically building and releasing packages for RPMs and for DEBs. And in the future, we'll have more. And so I think that's also another area of exciting development, is that the platform is not only open source and you could access the source code and everything, but you can actually download it, install it yourself without really being that much of an expert.
And so when you're talking about this being open source, how much of it is open source? Is it everything or most of the basic things? I mean, at what point do you draw the line?
That's a good question. So the platform is open source, and we're committed to basically saying, you know, those capabilities are basically creating those workflows and managing everything underneath. That's really open source, and that also helped us over the years because a lot of people, be it customers, paying customers, or community developers that are just using the open source tools, have helped us over the years to make the platform better. Where we draw the line is mostly where it gets connected to other proprietary solutions. Right. So if there's another proprietary solution, let's say, you know, an encoder or something like that that needs to be integrated, that would be closed source too, mostly to respect the licensing of the other system as well, but also in applications. So as a platform, a lot of what we build has basically API, actually everything. Right. So internally, our core services and core servers are talking to each other over API, as well as applications that are using the platform all talking through the same API. We have also built a set of applications. One notable one is called Media Space, and Kaltura Media Space is basically kind of a video portal in a box, if you will, your own YouTube. Mm-hmm. Or we also have the same thing for the OTT market, kind of a Netflix in a box, if you will. And those are closed source, and basically customers are buying them. Interestingly, though, when we build those applications, even when you're a paying customer, you're generally getting access to the source code, too. And that kind of is on the same lines of being open source, but customers are actually encouraged to help us build and you know, get full transparency into what they're buying.
That also would then take care of the issue of source code escrow, so that you don't think, nobody has to worry if you go away. No, you worry, but nobody else has to worry, right?
We're not doing vendor locking, and that's a very important thing. The fact that our core is open and AGPL is a very good thing, because it basically means that if you go with us, no matter what happens in the future, you do have this.
Yeah.
And we're committed to keeping this being the core open and AGPL at all costs.
And also earlier, when you're talking about various ways of building packages and things like that, I don't think I caught whether you're doing things like Docker containers or maybe, you know, virtual machines that you can play with. Is that all in part of the process?
Right. So what we've decided to do is release native packages for Linux. Mm-hmm. That means that we release native RPMs and DEBs. It's not just the one, because it's a very complex platform and it can run on a clustered environment. And we did not want just one big blob that is like essentially pretty much the same as an archive of target gzip. We wanted to utilize the capabilities that these package managers extend to make the installation far easier and also much more controllable. As a result of that, releasing RPMs and DEBs, you can then take these and use whatever deployment tool you'd like to deploy them. So you're not constrained to one particular tool. It doesn't have to be a Docker container. It could be. But it can also be a VM box, and it can be pure iron, if you like. Mm-hmm. And I find that personally to be a very good decision, because it does not limit our users to any one deployment solution. We do provide Docker images if people would like to use them, and we have chef recipes as well. Mm. And we encourage people to contribute other deployment recipes to us if they'd like. I wouldn't mind merging CF engine code or any other engine out there.
There's also Vagrant.
I'm sorry, yes, there's Vagrant as well. But the important thing, and I think that was a very good decision on our part, was to go native and release in a native format, which means that any system that supports that particular native format can just run.
Cool.
So ultimately, you can run it virtualized or on your bare-bone metal.
It can be anywhere. It can be an Amazon image, which is basically Xen. It can be any virtualization solution.
Right.
It can be your own laptop. Yep. That's fine, too.
Right. Hey, we actually had a question from the chat, and we have a live chat room as this show is being taped. And Clamp asks, scales to VR, too? I'm sure on the roadmap you must eventually have a virtual reality systems as being part of your
video
scope.
Really good question. So starting 2014, actually, we had a large hackathon in New York, and a big topic started to become both virtual reality and augmented reality, because two of the finalists and actually one of the winners, their projects were basically virtual reality based on Kaltura, which at the time used Oculus Rift. Mm-hmm. And the other one that actually won was a project that did augmented reality using Kaltura, where he built basically an application that you would point your phone towards an image. Back at the time, the event was at the Jazz at Lincoln Center in New York, and there are many pictures in the walls of jazz bands, and you would point your phone towards a picture of a jazz band, and it would start magically playing on the image.
Wow.
But it would actually find the right video of that specific band and start playing it inside the image. So back in 2014, we already saw that this is becoming really important. And we started exploring the market, and we're actually supporting a lot of startups that want to build those experiences based on Kaltura. And we are actually going to announce something really exciting in June for startups. So if you're a startup that are building virtual reality or augmented reality technology, and you're in need of a back-end platform to support the heavy workloads of video, be it the management of a lot of video assets or sorts of ingestion workflows, definitely do come talk to us. We have some thoughts around how to simplify both the delivery of virtual reality as well as some forms of helping you build better experiences on top of our player and things like that. We haven't released it yet, but it's definitely on the roadmap.
Is this the kind of thing, I'm trying to, again, still get scope of this. It just sounds so huge, and I know video is everywhere now. I still sometimes have a hard time kind of putting my head around, this would be great for this, but really bad for that. Would this be something that I might want to build a Google Hangouts with?
Yes, eventually. So today, and this is, you know, from a strategy perspective, again, we see it as cloud services for everything video, right? So yes, it is really big, and really, we aim for everybody, every developer anywhere, whoever wants to build an experience that involves a lot of video, to basically be able to use Kaltura to build those experiences without really having to understand everything involves around video. Like, you know, like today, when you're building an application, you don't really need to think about servers. You don't really need to think about, you know, building a data center. You simply go into someone like Amazon or Azure and you build whatever. The same thing with video, right? Today, building video experiences like Twitch TV, for example, it's rather complicated. There are many, many different components around it. But we really aim for everybody to be able to do it without really having to understand all the complexities that are around it, or even if you understand, not having to do everything yourself and have a jumping board to get started really quickly. And again, this is a part of the announcements that are coming tomorrow. We'll really make it accessible and available for everybody. Interestingly, that's from a strategy perspective. Today, we're really strong when it comes to delivering experiences that are targeting a lot of people, right? So if it's VOD or if it's live broadcasting, where you're broadcasting from one or two places to a lot, that's where the sweet spot of Kaltura today. Eventually, and this is on our roadmap, and we're already building towards also having all the capabilities for WebRTC-based one-on-one communications and things like that. So the Google Hangouts experience is not something you would be able to build on Kaltura today, but it is eventually will get there. But building the Twit TV, for example, experience where it's basically one broadcasting to the world for millions of users, that is something you could easily achieve today with Kaltura.
Very cool. And how about classroom applications? It's also good for like having pre-recorded lectures, but then having some sort of interactive things from time to time?
Certainly. So, and as I said before, I mean, the industries where we actually are very dominant in today is education, enterprise, and OTT and media. And in the classroom, we see a lot of different applications. There are universities using Kaltura for e-learning, the typical use cases. There are universities who are using Kaltura for student assignments, where a professor would basically, as part of your course and as part of your grade, you will be asked to actually submit a video assignment. Think about, business courses where you need to do negotiations or when you need to do presentations. This is actually a part of your course now, a part of your grade. So a lot of integrations into the learning management system where you natively work with video just like it is another text file or another asset. We're also seeing a lot of other applications, and we actually have provide tools, applications for those use cases, learning management in terms of lecture capture, for example. So integrating into different lecture capture systems, and we have a technology partners program where a lot of the lecture capture companies are actually integrated with Kaltura. And there's as part of our commitment to open source, we also created the open capture standard. So together with the LMS, IMS, one of the organizations for educational standards, and we've actually contributed the foundations to basically building the standard, and it's a format that basically helps every lecture capture system ingest content to any system and basically maintain the freedom of the content and the ability for the school to move the content easily between systems. We also provide a lecture capture system ourselves, mostly based on software. We're a very software company. We don't really do hardware that much or at all. And we believe that eventually lecture capture is not just about, very robust systems in your room, but also about enabling every student to do a capture of the lecture that they provide, or a professor be able to open up their laptop, click a button, and that's it, like not having to worry about a very complicated system. And this is from a user perspective, from an end user experience, this is where we put a lot of effort and a lot of time into understanding how are people engaging with video, what sorts of tools we can build in order to make their lives easier working with video.
Cool. Hey, I've got to read another ad, so because I've got to pay the bills. So. But I do want to cover more the technical side coming up after the break. So like what the community is like, whether you've got good contributions from outside, things like that. But we'll come back to that just in a minute. So, whether you're out developing an app, a website, or working on a server-based project, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean offers Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed easily to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. This helps you get your project off the ground quickly and makes it easy to scale when you find success. DigitalOcean is used by over 600,000 developers, including me. I discovered DigitalOcean about a year and a half ago, and I've had servers running ever since then. It's been really awesome. Always good stuff from them. You can deploy and configure your droplets via a streamlined control panel or a simple API. You can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. That's mine. I really prefer that operating system. You can select from one of many pre-configured one-clicks like Drupal, Docker, or Node.js to get up and running quickly, or build the exact infrastructure you need with root access to servers running 100% SSDs in state-of-the-art data centers around the world. It's highly scalable to meet the demands of a rapidly growing application or business. You can also use advanced features like floating IPs for high availability, private networking, and automated deployments via API. It has an extremely active community with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your droplet. Want to configure a LAMP server, set up a virtual desktop or VPN? They've got you covered.
And it's so easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit for free. We really thank DigitalOcean for their support of FLOSS Weekly. Okay, so let's go back and look at some of the things I talked just about just before the break. So how much of the contributions that are happening to Kaltura are coming from outside the Kaltura company?
I'd say we have about 50 pretty serious contributors mm-hmm. who look into things. And it's not just feature requests or bugs, but also documentation, people helping at the forum. Mm-hmm. These things are very important contributions, and we do see them, and we see a growing number of them over the years.
Okay.
Making the installation more accessible has naturally contributed to that greatly, because no matter how amazing the product is, if you can't install it, then you give up, and people tend to give up rather rapidly, which is a good thing and a sensible thing to do. So making the installation easier to do, and nowadays installing one node is roughly 15 minutes, most of it machine time and not you time, has contributed a lot towards making it more accessible thing for others to participate in. So we have about 50 who are regulars, who contribute over time and again, and we also have a lot of one-timers who come in and install the product and say, look, you've got a typo in your document,
mm-hmm.
also important.
Yeah.
Or I've tried installing it on this system, and you don't officially support that, but I think if you change just this and that, it'll work, which is a very good contribution, in my humble opinion. So to make a long story short, about 50 regulars and many one-timers, which I hope will come back.
Well, you know, one of the things we keep saying is you don't have to be a coder to contribute to an open source project. Even as simple as having a bug request for maybe a new feature that would really help fill in your gap, you know, is always like that. What's this all written in?
Our backend is mostly PHP,
mm-hmm.
mostly. We do have client libraries in various languages that we extend, like SDKs. So pretty much anything you can think of, from PHP, of course, to Node.js, to C-sharp even, and others. But the backend is mostly PHP. We use a LAMP stack fully. We've recently introduced Node.js for particular operations.
Mm-hmm.
We also use Nginx for a different thing. We have a VOD model that basically allows you to run your own CDN locally and serve and repackage MP4s into Dash and other formats, HDA, HLS, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But the main language would be PHP mostly, yeah.
In the backend, yeah.
In the backend.
Because now you have 3 years behind you since the last time we talked, is it heading in the direction you thought you were going? Or what's your biggest surprise so far now about what's happened in the last 3 years?
Oh, that's a good question.
I try to ask the good ones first.
Yeah.
You do well.
Thank you.
What was surprises? I don't know if we had serious surprises. I mean, in the past 3 years, I think, I don't know if you call it a surprise, but I mean, the market is generally moving towards the direction that we were betting it would go, right? Video everywhere, everybody needs video, and the market is becoming more sophisticated, which basically translates into people wanting to own more of the experience, people wanting to integrate it better into their own environments, their own native systems, rather than just use it as an application. So while, you know, YouTube, everybody knows how to use YouTube and upload a video or maybe an embed on your website, now every blogger wants to have, you know, better ownership over that video. Every application will want to have video natively in their own application rather than just allowing everybody to embed a YouTube, you know, embed on their page, but actually allowing you to ingest video from your mobile, or, you know, allowing you to better customize the player and so on. But I think in terms of surprises, it's more about the market is moving faster. So whereas in 2013, I would think probably that we need to build more and more applications in order to serve more and more industries and, you know, spend more time educating people about the importance of using video in their workflows. Fast forward 3 years, we really are no longer in a position where we need to convince you why video is important. I mean, everybody thinks that video is important.
Yes.
And so it's more about, you know, giving you the tools to do what you want to do with video, and really allow you to be sophisticated with it. And I think in terms of surprises, it's moving fast, and it's a pleasant surprise. So.
Cool. Well, one of the things I'm sort of curious about is, are we getting rid of Flash fast enough?
Not fast enough. But I'm actually kind of torn here. I mean, in my earlier days as a developer, I was a Flash developer. I spent a lot of time working and building on Flash, and I had very good relationships with people in Adobe and specifically the Flash team. And sadly, the story of Flash is too little, too late. As an open source advocate, I think you can relate to that. And it's actually interesting. So very early on in the beginning of Kaltura, so 2006, we started. 2007, we launched HTML5Video.org, and I think we talked a little bit about it in 2013. Mm-hmm. The reason we launched HTML5Video.org and the Open Video Alliance together with Mozilla and other companies was that back then, we started seeing that trend that commercial softwares, commercial codecs, commercial plugins that are required in order to experience video are hindering the market. They're not allowing you to really own the experience the way that you need to, and they're actually forcing you to, you know, to massive operations in order to actually achieve what you want. And so we started doing this in order to encourage more and more activity around HTML5 and more activity around open source in the world of video. And again, you know, pleasant surprises since then is it moved so quickly that there's no longer need for neither Open Video Alliance or the HTML5Video.org website, because really it's in everybody's mind now. So I think HTML5 has proven itself. You no longer really see people wanting Flash. And I think, was it yesterday or about a few days ago, Google announced that Flash will be officially deprecated from Chrome by Q4 this year.
Nice.
So that has been a very pleasant surprise too. It's not going fast enough, I can tell you, mostly because of legacy environments. Oftentimes you'll meet enterprises that are forcing old Internet Explorer on their users and things like that. And that is, I would say, one of the main reasons you're still forced to support legacy systems like Flash. But that will go away. And I think sooner than everybody thinks. And that's where I think we're going.
Go ahead.
I think the industry is realizing slowly, but not as slowly as before, that closed source is not good, even for enterprises. I think that's, I've been saying that for years. I've been saying for 20 years or so that Microsoft will have to open its things unless they want to be killed. And people would laugh at me often. And they're laughing less nowadays when I say that, to a point where they almost say, you know, yeah, it's true, though. Because you don't want to buy a car with the hood welded down. And people are starting to realize that, and they're starting to understand that even if they themselves are not developers at all, they get a lot out of the fact that the thing is open. Vendor lock-in is eliminated, among other things. And I think big industries have a problem because they have their IT department who set up these images of the operating system back in 2005. And they're not excited about changing that, but they'll have to. And their executives will soon tell them that this is unacceptable and will get rid of Flash, among other things, like Internet Explorer 6 and 8.
Well, one of the things that having something open source does, which I'm preaching to the choir here, of course, is that it also means I'm not locked into that vendor for support.
Exactly.
I can find third-party people who will support the stuff that I have in critical use in production.
Right, right. And often for free as well, because people are passionate about open source. I mean, nobody's passionate about supporting Internet Explorer, but a lot of people are passionate about supporting users who are using open source technology. And I see that from my community as well. I see people who are not Kaltura employees at all, not getting paid from the other people who are using Kaltura, but are very delighted to help them. Because it's a thing. It's more than just source code. And you know, yeah, that's powerful.
I think what's important also is, you know, vendor locking is just one thing. There is a lot to owning the experience and being able to do exactly what you want, right? And so there are many different providers in our domains depending on different industries, right? Many of the online video platforms that are serving specific, you know, there's a video platform for education, and there's a video platform for enterprise, and there's a video platform for media companies and so on. What we've been told by customers who are, you know, often coming to Kaltura from a different vendor is, you know, with that provider, I was forced to use that workflow, that tool, that, you know, this is this experience, because this is what they provide. And when they go and, you know, even when they go and sell, I remember one of a sales rep that worked with us and came from a different company told us is, you know, when we used to sell that, we would come to the customer with a, you know, a book of options and tell them this is what you can build. Mm-hmm. And with Kaltura, what they like is, and what we like is the fact that we don't really tell you this is what you should do. We actually ask you what you want to do. And I think this is, you know, largely open source is a big component of it, right? Because when it's open source, you can control the workflow and you can build what you want and then submit it back and make sure that it's supported forever, and it's a part of the platform. And I think what a lot of customers are loving about this is, you know, even if you pay a lot of money for a platform, you shouldn't really be forced to just using something that somebody else decided this is what it should look like or what it should feel like or how it should work. And, you know, by being both open source and commercial, we actually enable those customers to do that and still keep them maintained, keep their experience and their workflow maintained forever, because it then becomes a part of the same platform, then becomes a part of the same community, and is, you know, keeps maintained forever.
I assume the primary governance for the Kaltura platform is still Kaltura the company, and I'm wondering what informs that from the public. How do you decide, oh, I guess we really should lean towards this sort of thing with a higher priority? How do you get information about that?
It's a good question. I think there are predominantly, I would say, two components to that question, right? One is how do you determine your roadmap? And the other one is how do you determine whether a specific contribution gets in or not?
Yes.
I'm happy to say that on the latter, we never really needed an official, like, governance for it. Because if your code is good, and if it does something that will support people, and, you know, even if it supports a very small group of people, but it's built in a way that is modular and can be enabled or disabled and can be maintained, and it's, you know, not a bad code that will cause something bad to the platform, it normally gets accepted. So there's never been really something that someone, like a valuable contribution that someone made, that did not make it into the platform because, you know, somebody decided that way or not. So I think on that side, things have been pretty smooth on that domain. Just like any other software, though, it sometimes, if your contribution, depending on the size of the contribution, may take a little longer to actually review your code and make sure that, you know, it actually stands for the coding standards and, you know, it doesn't cause any issues with the rest of the platform. Another aspect to this is also our choice from the very beginning to be both modular as well as API-centric. So because we're modular, everything both in the backend as well as in the front end, like, you know, players and things like that, it's all built in a way that accepts plugins and very easily. So the backend, for example, if you want to extend a functionality or add an API, you write a plugin. And it's very easy for us to accept that plugin if it's written well. It's very easy for us to accept that plugin because it doesn't have to be enabled by default for everybody. It can just be, you know, accepted into the project, become a part of it, and then lives on. If you decide to maintain it, that's great. If you decide to not maintain it, eventually it will probably get deprecated, like a lot of things that we wrote to.
Or adopted by someone else.
Or adopted by someone else, yeah. Obviously. Another aspect to modularity is that we also have, and it sometimes has been a little bit of a challenge to a newcomer, is that we also maintain various different projects. So if you go to our GitHub account, for example, it's not that easy to figure out where you need to go. We are working on a new page that will actually help you do that, but there are many, 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 many projects there. Mm-hmm. And like just mentioned, for example, one of the most important contributions we've made is an Nginx model. It's actually a bunch of Nginx models that basically do real-time repackaging of content. And you know, over the years we've seen a lot of different companies get involved, from CDNs and so on, to media companies, for example. But in order to find the projects, you actually needed to go onto our GitHub account and explore around and so on. So to being very modular, there are two sides to it, right? One side is really good. It's easy to accept contributions, easy to work with everybody. But on the other side, and it's very flexible, on the other side, it also is a little bit harder to figure out what goes on if you're a newbie. To answer the other side of your question, which is the roadmap, it has been it's a baby industry in a way, right? People are still figuring out what they need to do. There are some things that the market and our users would sort of tell us ahead of time, like VR and AR, for example. Back in 2014, for example, we knew about this and it was interesting, but we didn't really have a plan to do anything in that domain. But when you start seeing other people doing work around that and coming back to you and saying, we really need to support this and that, or, for example, ingesting 360 wasn't really that easy in 2014, and he had to do a lot of different hacks around the platform to get what he wanted. So those kind of things are generally sort of being dictated by the user base, by the companies that are using us, by the users that are installing Kaltura. The RPMs and dev projects, for example, has been mostly driven by community demand, right? People have tried to install Kaltura for years, and not everybody is a PHP expert, and we have a lot of dependencies and a lot of different components. So a lot of it has been, you know, mandated by the community saying, hey, you know, we really want to use your software, but it's really impossible to install. So, you know, there's the part of it. But a lot of the roadmap is still being determined and being pushed by the company, by Kaltura, mostly because, you know, we're deeper in the industry and we're always step ahead and we know really what needs to be done. But if somebody will come in and say, hey, we really need that or we really need that, it will definitely, I've yet to see somebody ask something like this and be kind of rejected. Yeah. Our natural approach would be to first ask, okay, what and how would you do it? And, or have you, you know, would you consider contributing something like that yourself? But then if a lot of people would ask that, it would generally get pushed into the program.
Yeah,
I'd say in general, we're a company that listens. We realize that the end users, be it developers or people who are viewing the videos, mm-hmm. are the ones that know what they want.
Yes.
And if enough people tell you that this is something they want, then you should listen. And if you don't, you're going to get ruined. And we really try to listen and we try to guide these people towards substantial contributions as well. So if a person says, I want to implement something that has to do with VR, how can I start? What do you offer? And so forth. We'd have a dialogue with them and we'd explain to them and we'd say, look, I recommend you start by installing this and look into our APIs here and here and so forth. We also walk them through how to create a pull request in a way that would be easy to merge and so forth. So I'd say, like, unlike a lot of other companies, not naming names, we're really interested in seeing people contribute into our code base, and we realized that just saying, look, here's the code, we basically do what the F we want with it, right? But here it is. We say, here it is. Here is how we'd like you to take part in this thing. And if you've got questions, do let us know, because we want you in there. We acknowledge that outsiders giving feedback and providing new features is important.
That's a great stance to take. Hey, we're almost out of time, but I want to get to one question from the chat room, and I also have a couple of personal questions, too. So, oops, switch too quickly. R. Campbell 3 in the chat room says, how do they view related tools and projects like OBS Studio and Twitch? I don't know what either of those are, but is that related to anything you're talking about?
I'm not familiar with OBS Studio, but I do know what Twitch is.
Yeah.
I know what Twitch is.
Is Twitch something like you would build with this?
So platform? Twitch, yeah. Twitch, like Twitch TV, for example, is certainly something you would build with Kaltura. Okay. You know, it's like somebody would ask, what's the difference between YouTube and Kaltura? I mean, YouTube is something you would build with Kaltura. Or you would, you know, something use like Media Space and just get it off the shelf. I think what's interesting about this comment is that, you know, this is still an example of how the market is very much in infancy, right? Most people are still seeing YouTube as kind of the golden standard, or Twitch as, you know, the standard for live and so on. Mm-hmm. But the reality is it's not, and this is what we're trying to challenge, right? You should not think about those as your standard. You should think about your own specific experience. What do your users need? If you're, for example, in healthcare, and your goal is to reduce, for example, the number of patients coming back because of maltreatment or because of them not knowing how exactly to use the medicine, for example, they've been assigned with, you should really think about the experience that touches those specific people. And sometimes just a simple web page with a playlist like YouTube is not really enough for your specific experience. And we've had companies like that, you know, this specific example, Novo Nordisk, and you could actually go on videoscultura.com and see some of those key study videos on video. You know, there's in some countries in Europe, it's actually mandated right now that when you purchase medicine, you get a video that explains how to use it. Mm. So it's actually starting to come from the government. But it is now the responsibility of the company who sells the medicine to provide the correct experience for those users, right? And so one way to do it is to basically create a playlist on their web page and tell you, hey, go look it up, which is what most of those companies would do nowadays. But what they've done was basically say, okay, so almost everybody has phones nowadays, and certainly everybody in Europe. It's very easy for us to simply put a QR code on the medicine package and tell you, scan this, right. And you scan it, and it opens up the video, and you just listen to, you know, what it tells, and or start creating more interactivity around it and saying, you know, if it's a special syringe that you need to use, you know, being able to kind of move back and forth in the specific video. So I think what's important is, and if there's any important message that I would like to kind of people carry away is, start thinking about your own experience. Start thinking about what your end users are really needing, mm-hmm. And don't be limited by, you know, what the market standards, you know, for a consumer video are today outside, because your experience is generally different. It generally requires more subtleties. There are nuances to your specific world, and that's where we, you know, we come in. That's what we provide, the tools to basically own those experiences and do it yourself.
I'd say in relation to that what's nice about us is that we say, okay, if you want to customize your video flow, and I use the word flow and not experience, because experience is usually related to the end user, but the entire flow, we provide the building blocks so that you can do it exactly as you want to do it. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't, we have ready-made products that will give you a lot of options without having to code at all. But the emphasis here, I think, should be on if you want to be able to do it, we provide it and we encourage you to do that.
Great. Hey, actually, one of the helpless corgis, helpless corgis, wow, crazy names, said, confirm with me on this or not, Kaltura is like a bare-bones PC system you buy at Fry's. It needs more to become a full-fledged tool.
So I wouldn't say that. I'd say it has everything. It's a fully-fledged tool.
Okay.
But it tells you, okay, this is how we thought it should work. But if you don't want it that way, here are the options and the building blocks, and the whole thing is open. Go ahead and change it. And if you'd like, let us know about it so we'd know and can do something about it. But
so to use an analogy from Lego, you bought the Millennium Falcon kit.
Exactly.
But maybe you wanted the radar dish on the other side. Exactly. You didn't want a radar dish or whatever.
Exactly.
We oftentimes use the Lego analogy basically with Kaltura because everything, I mean, even our API, for example, you know, we built the API original version in 2007, right? And it actually proved itself because we took the approach of sort of microservices for API. It controls pretty much everything in the system and it's very atomic. But everything is built from a services and actions perspective, but you can go as low as, you know, getting the logs of FFmpeg, if FFmpeg is your transcoder, all the way to not understanding what FFmpeg is and simply ingesting and getting, you know, getting back a video that plays back on every device without understanding anything. So
wow.
You can go as low as possible, as high as possible with the same API. A lot of what we're now putting a lot of effort and a lot of time in is the developer experience and really coming up with, you know, your user or your developer flow when you get started with Kaltura. And so how do I achieve what I want to achieve in the shortest path and shortest time possible? And that's something that we're doing a lot of work around nowadays and something that you'll start seeing a lot more interesting things in, you know, for our next conversation.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we'll have a lot of interesting things to share in the domain of developer experience.
Great. Okay, I got two tiny questions that I invented. What you talked about a moment ago, I'm thinking about scaling and HA. Is there anything sort of, is Kaltura providing me information so I can do proper HA and scaling, or is that really outside the scope of this project?
Right. So we do have a very extensive API that can tell you about the status of our platform. And in fact, I've given that session several times, I think, where I show how I generate more traffic so that we'll need more transcoders because a lot of entries are being uploaded.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got this monitoring system set up, which is a basic simple script using our API,
mm-hmm.
testing the queue for conversions. And once it reaches a certain threshold, it automatically pops up more instances of batch machines in order to do transcoding. And it's actually rather neat. I'll give you a link to my blog post about it.
Yeah.
And the whole thing I've done in about, I don't know, roughly 15 lines of code. So I'd say if you've got the infrastructure to scale, be it on AWS, Rackspace, or your own OpenStack, we're rather easy to scale with because mm-hmm. we do provide a lot of insights about what's going on in our platform via the API. We also have a little project that is recent called Jam, and Jam is a generic monitoring system for PHP apps, which Kaltura is one of. It's an open source project that I've written, so you can just install that and it operates as a PHP extension,
mm-hmm.
informing you as to everything that the engine has received, the Zend engine has received as errors, and you can act upon that too.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, you can get a pretty good idea as to the health of our system.
Cool. We're almost out of time. As I said, I got one other question. As I was scanning through the website this morning and last night, I saw this thing Kaltura Connect.
Yeah.
Do you want to describe that?
Sure. So as part of our commitment to an open community and to people who share insights and use cases and stories about what they do with Kaltura and about what they're doing with video in general and in order to educate the market about what can be done with video. We've actually, I think the first one was in 2011, we've launched a series of conferences in the crown jewel is basically Kaltura Connect. And so Kaltura Connect is basically a conference where people come in and discuss what they do with video, what they do with Kaltura, and share use cases and practices, best practices, and so on. Last year, so we've actually had this conference both online as well as in person in New York. Last year was the first year where we actually started doing this only virtually. And it mostly came to be because a lot of people basically started telling us, you know, it's really wonderful that I can come into New York once a year, but I actually don't. I can't really make that travel, and it's really far, but I still want to listen. I still want to see everything. I still want to be involved. And so we started doing this virtually and committed to our, you know, message with video, right? Virtual Connect today is a virtual summit that happens 3 times a year, basically. Nowadays, it's focused on 3 industries, but we're starting to see more and more demand for more industries. So you'll see the first education summit, right?
Yes.
It's coming
May 19th.
And you can go on the website and register for it.
It's free.
It's completely free.
My favorite
generally,
word.
Last year, I think we had about 6,000 attendees to it online. So it's a really fun kind of experience. You go in and there's, you know, the speakers are sharing their use cases and experiences, and there's like a live chat that you can participate in, or you can download all sorts of resources related to the specific conference. This is obviously all based on Kaltura. So kind of a showcase of what you can do. Specifically, this Virtual Connect is sort of a mix between live and VOD. So it's kind of simulated live when you watch the specific session, but then right after the session, there is a live Q&A with the speakers.
Wow.
So it's kind of an interesting experience where you can watch kind of a pre-recorded, pre-edited, really, you know, well articulated session by, you know, leading universities or leading enterprises and so on, and you know, what they do with Kaltura, what they do with video, and then right after that, actually ask them questions in live and talk to them in live. So it's really exciting. And, you know, with the success of last year, we're really excited to see how many people are actually going to join this year. It's going to be interesting.
Nice. Okay, almost out of time. Did I miss anything? Is there anything you want to make sure our audience is aware of? You had some wonderful summary statements the last couple of statements, but did I miss anything?
I would say two things. One is stay tuned for tomorrow's announcements with Kaltura. There's going to be some really interesting and fun announcements coming out. If you're in Oscon, definitely come see us. We have a booth here. It's, I think, been our 9th year or so sponsoring Oscon. We love it here. If you want to get involved, if you want to try it out, definitely come talk to us or get on the forums, forum.kaltura.org, or go on github.com/kaltura and search for the platform packages to install it yourself. You know, go open an account and definitely come see us if you're in Oscon.
Might be worth mentioning the university.
So again, as part of our commitment to educating the market, we actually started another initiative this year called the Kaltura University. It's university.kaltura.com. It's kind of a learning management system based on Moodle that we've customized to a certain degree with a lot of video capabilities in it, and basically allows you today to learn a lot about Kaltura products. But we're ramping up. I mean, we just launched it, so there are a number of courses there, but we're going to start offering a lot more courses there around video, around building stuff with Kaltura, about the, you know, APIs, courses for developers with video, things like that.
Also showcases what you can do with Kaltura as far as education goes.
So. Exciting. Very cool. Well, Zar and Jess, I really appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you for having us.
And Thomas, and great for the update. So thank you both.
Always great being here.
Thank you so much.
Yes. So that was Zahar and Jess who came on to talk about Kaltura. But I have a few pieces of business to do before we get out of here. So I'm going to talk about the upcoming guests. Normally I would recap the show at this point, but I don't have anybody to talk to. So it was a great show. Up next week, we've got the best practices badge where you can put an identifier on your website that you're following the list of best practices and link to those best practices. Pretty cool. Varnish Cash, big website users all over the world. So we're going to get somebody on there talking about the Varnish project.
I've actually had three previous clients use it as part of a fundamental part of their ability to deliver pages fast. It's basically a caching reverse web server. And so it does some transmogrification as well, like compressing the CSS and things all on the fly. Just added to the schedule, GitLab. It's funny, everybody knows what GitLab is, but a lot of people don't know the open source behind the scenes and all that. So we're going to take somebody, I think fairly senior, I think like the head of CTO or something like that there. Also just added to the schedule, we have DataStax, which is basically a Cassandra library and a lot more, a Cassandra interface. That's a NoSQL database and a really big stack on top of that. It was actually used to help sort through some of the Panama project, whatever that the whole data that came from out of that money laundering schemes. And we also just added to the schedule Lisk, which is not Lisp, it's Lisk. It's a JavaScript-based sidechain apps in the cloud. So you can actually do blockchain stuff, and it looks really cool. Nobody else is doing it yet, apparently, so they're going to come on and really describe this brand-new project they got going. We have a live stream. The show notes are basically at twit.tv/floss. If you look on there, you'll also find the big spreadsheet to talk about who is coming up, who I'm trying to get on the show. I tell you, OSCON's made this very simple. I've had press releases after press releases after press releases, and I say to them, I can't meet you at OSCON, but here's where you can fit in on my show coming up soon. So I'm really filling up pretty fast. Starting to open up Q3, so you should see a lot more guests coming up as we did. We had the live stream, 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays at live.twit.tv, and you can also watch the show being filmed behind the scenes. You can follow us at Floss Weekly and Google+, and also at Floss Weekly, automatically tweeted over there. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google+. That's where my primary content comes from, but that also then tweets and Facebooks. So on the Twitter, it's Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. I'm going to be at YAPSE NA, which is now being called the Pearl Conference again. We finally got the name back. Coming up, that'll be in Orlando, Florida in about 2 weeks, I think it is. And then I'm also going to be at the Red Hat Summit in San Francisco. Yay, San Francisco. Haven't been in a while, so I'm going to go back for a few days, meet my San Francisco friends. Also, Texas Linux Fest, right back here in Austin again. So a little bit shorter time, though, just a couple days there. I had announced for a while that I was going to be in Porto Alegre, Brazil, in a couple months after that, or a month after that, but I have decided I did not want to be a vector for Zika, so I am not going. I hope to go next year. And then finally in September, DragonCon. I've already got my schedule worked out. I'm going to be on 3 or 4 panels there on the EFF track. Looking forward to that. Always one of my favorite conferences. 50,000 people all going crazy all over the 17 different hotel venues. So that's all I have to plug. Oh, normally I would say, and what do you have to plug? But hey, there's nobody here. It's just me. So we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.